Bishop Williamson, this is your verse. There was not one Jew killed by the gas chambers. It was all lies, lies, lies. Are these your words?
You're quoting from Canada, I believe, yes, of many years ago. I believe that the historical evidence is hugely against 6 million Jews having been deliberately gassed in gas chambers as a deliberate policy of Adolf Hitler.
But you say not one.
As far as I've understood the evidence, people who are against what is very widely believed today about quote-unquote the Holocaust, I think that people those people conclude, the revisionists as they're called, I think the most serious conclude that between 200,000 and 300,000 Jews perished in Nazi concentration camps, but not one of them by gassing in a gas chamber. You may have heard of the Leuchter report. Fred Leuchter was an expert in gas chambers. He designed 3 gas chambers for 3 states, 3 of the 50 United States, for the execution of criminals. So he knew what's involved, and he studied what the supposed gas chambers in Germany at some point in the 1980s, what remains of the supposed gas chambers, the crematoria at Birkenau, Auschwitz, for instance. And his conclusion, his expert conclusion was, it's impossible that these could ever have served for the gassing of large numbers of people. Because cyanide gas is very dangerous. Supposing you gas 300 people that you've crowded into one chamber and you gas them. They're all wearing some clothes. For instance, if they're wearing any clothes, it's very dangerous to go in and pull out the corpses because one whiff of gas that's trapped in the clothing and escapes from the clothing will kill the person. It's extremely dangerous. You've got to evacuate the gas to be able to get into the chamber again and use it. To evacuate the gas, you need a high chimney. If it's a low chimney, the gas goes onto the pavement and kills anybody walking by. You need a high chimney, right? I forget how high he says it must be. If there was a high chimney, then the shadow, at any most times of day, the shadow would have fallen on the ground, and the Allied aerial photographers that flew over the camps would have picked up the shadow of this chimney. There were never any such shadows. There was no such chimney. Which is according to Fred Leuchter's testimony, there can't have been gas chambers. He looks at the doors and he says, the door has to be absolutely airtight. Otherwise, again, the gas escapes and kills the people outside. The doors of the gas chamber that is shown to tourists at Auschwitz is absolutely not airtight. Absolutely not.
So, you know, what you're saying now is that the Holocaust never occurred. Not in the way history is written today.
I am going by what I judge to be the historical evidence, according to people who have observed and examined that evidence. I believe that what they conclude, I would if they change their conclusion, I would be liable to follow their conclusion, because I think they judge by the evidence. I think that 200,000 to 300,000 Jews perished in Nazi concentration camps, but nothing like that. None of them by a gas chamber. I don't know if you know.
This is not anti-Semitism. What is anti-Semitism?
Anti-Semitism. If anti-Semitism is bad, it's against truth. If something is true, it's not bad. I'm not interested in the word anti-Semitism. I mean, you know, it's the word is very
dangerous.
The
bishop calls you anti-Semitism.
The bishop can call me he can call me a dinosaur. He can call me an idiot. He can call me what he likes. This is not a question of name calling. This is a question of historical truth. Historical truth goes by evidence and not by emotion. There's certainly been a huge exploitation. Germany has paid out billions and billions of Deutschmarks and now euros because the Germans have a guilt complex about their having gassed 6 million Jews. But I don't think 6 million Jews were gassed. Now, but be careful. I beg of you, this is against the law in Germany. If there was a German, somebody that's a German state, you could have me thrown into prison before I leave Germany. I hope that's not your intention. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Shank Talk Worldwide. I'm your host, Peter Shank, fighting the war of perception every Wednesday. And that was a bishop that the Pope just reinstated into the Catholic religion, a Catholic bishop saying that he did not believe the popular version of the Holocaust. Now, what's particularly interesting and exciting about this video, which you can find on my blog, shankblog.com, is the fact that Bishop Richard Williamson was excommunicated back in 1988, I believe, by the last pope, Pope John Paul II, I believe it was.
Yes,
it was Pope John Paul II who excommunicated Bishop Richard Williamson back in 1988. Now, he was excommunicated because he joined another group that was a break-off splinter group of Catholics who did not want to adhere to the Vatican II resolutions and basically the various resolutions and tenets that were reached in that meeting known as Vatican II. They were a splinter group that Bishop Williamson joined, but now the new pope, who has been called a Nazi by various patriotard broadcasters simply because the man as a youth worked for the Nazis, as all citizens of Germany did back in those days. It would be like somebody criticizing
a youth for fighting the Vietnam War simply because he was drafted. This is what you had to do, whether it was your patriotic duty or whether the government compelled you at the end of a gun barrel. You did these things. Now, the Pope, our current Pope, lived in Germany, and he did work for the Nazis as a youth, as all youth did back in those days. But yet, the patriotards working on behalf of Jews want to paint this Pope as a bad person, as a Nazi, as anti-Semitic, you name it. Today, the patriotard community, especially the leadership and all the broadcasters, I want to repeat this. I want you to get this, make this very clear to you. All, capital A-L-L, all patriotard broadcasters are working on behalf of the Jews, whether they know it or not, because they continue their false flag rhetoric. They continue leading people down false roads to dead ends. They continue to avoid the topic of the Jews, or the other topic, the other hot button topic that is a ratings killer for all of the patriotards that want to make it on mainstream radio, the topic of race. So the two topics they avoid, race and Jews, and never, never will you hear a patriotard broadcaster mention race and Jews on the same program. That is a real ratings killer for patriotards. So the patriotards, whether they believe it or not, are working on behalf of the Jews simply because they are neutered, they are impotent, and they refuse to discuss the truth. The truth, my friends, meaning all of the facts. You cannot find the truth unless you find all the facts. Or unless you discuss all the facts. This is something patriotards will not do. It doesn't matter if you bring them conclusive proof about the Holocaust or about Jewish involvement in 9/11 or the fact that the white race has been targeted by Jews for elimination, at least marginalization, at least castration. This is what the Jews are doing. They have targeted the white race because the white race is the prime mover in Western civilization. And the end result, of course, my friends, is the elimination of Western civilization and replace it with a Jew world order. This is something you will not hear on patriotard radio, and for a good reason. Because it scares advertisers, it scares people away that would give them money. And this, my friends, is all they are concerned about. So I want to tell you right now, don't send me letters and emails trying to educate me or edumacate me on the value of patriotard research, which there is no value whatsoever. I know these people. I worked with them. I interviewed them. Some of them used to be phone callers on my show. That's how they got their start in radio, calling up my program. Especially those, one in particular who lives in France, who used to call into my show and became an expert on his own, and has successfully assassinated the character of everyone he has worked with. So you see, my friends, I have no use for people that are not loyal. And the loyalty of the patriotard broadcaster was displayed very prominently when I was asked to leave patriotard broadcasting simply because I conducted an interview, a down-the-middle interview, a very reasonable interview, a professional interview with a representative of the National Socialist Party of America. And as a result, well, we don't want to answer that, do we? That's wonderful. You're on a program here and the damn cell phone goes off. So let's just get rid of that right now. I wonder if that was Alex Jones calling me.
Hey, what are you doing talking about patriotards? You know I'm a patriotard. You don't want to talk about me like that on the radio.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be the first time, would it? Wouldn't be the first time I got a phone call from that man on a personal line. Oh, yeah, he called me up and he told me to back off because he, you know, he's going to assassinate my character. It didn't matter if I was true or what I was saying was true or if I was being factual. All that mattered was he didn't like it and he was going to go out and basically do an expose on Peter Schenck and who he really is. Yeah, the fact that I work for a living. Yeah, that's about all he's going to get, about all he's going to dig up. But anyway, that's... That was his threat on the phone, and I've got it on a recording, like I said many, many months ago, and I'm sitting on it, waiting for some time in the future when I may have to unveil it, possibly in a court of law, who knows. Anyway, without further ado, let's continue here with this topic of the Pope welcoming back a Holocaust denier, Bishop Richard Williamson. But before we get into that, I wanted to continue with what I was discussing regarding patriotards and the reason why I'm bringing this up. Bishop Richard Williamson made a very important point. And this is why Bishop Richard Williamson is a very dangerous man to the New World Order and Jewish World Order, the Jewish World Order in particular. Bishop Williamson is a very thoughtful man. He is a very educated man, and he is very, very precise with his language. People that are very precise with their language and say what they mean and do it unflinchingly and unemotionally are the ones that are dangerous, not the people that come on the air with bullhorns screaming and yelling about Jews and screaming and yelling about, you know, the Illuminati and niggers and spicks and blah, 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 blah. No, these are not the dangerous people. The Hal Turners of the world are not the dangerous people because they don't speak to anyone other than the choir. The Tom Metzgers of the world are not the dangerous people. They are not the threat to the status quo or the Jew world order. The Alex Joneses are not a threat to the New World Order or the Jew world order. They are helping support the status quo. And I don't say this trying to attack these people. I'm saying this because it's a fact. What they do is speak to their own people. They are speaking to the choir. They are promoting ideas that have been around for at least 30 to 50 years. What Jones is discussing over the air is not any different than what conspiracy theorists were discussing 35 years ago, 30 years ago. The Illuminati, the New World Order, the One World Government, you know, don't trust the U.S., the CIA did it, blah, blah, blah. This is all stuff that was around in the 70s. This was around in the Nixon era. These theories are just rehashed, packaged, and put into nice new DVD compilations, and you buy them, and you young kids out there in your 20s, you think you've really come up with something new and unusual and revolutionary, and you think you've really found the answer by reading The Creature of Jekyll Island. Oh, this is it. It's the Federal Reserve. They're behind all of this. It's the Federal Reserve. It's the Republicans. It's the CIA. It's the this. It's the that. The Illuminati. The blah, blah, blah. This is what patriotards are promoting. Nonsense. Nonsense simply because while some of it is true, some of it is based in fact. It is not the truth because it is not based in complete fact. It is based on partial fact. This is the problem, and the other problem is that they're all ideologues. Idiot being the operative word. They promote their ideologies, they promote their conspiracy theories, and they do not factor in other information that may dispute their conspiracy theory. Now, on the other hand, Bishop Richard Williamson was very precise, and he was very eloquent with his answer regarding what is anti-Semitism. He said he was not concerned with anti-Semitism, at least the term itself. It did not matter to him what people called him. All that mattered was what was the truth. And he went on to recite a study that he had read. And he also went on to say that he'd seen other studies and he'd researched the event. And he said, using the historical information that is available, I do not believe 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. It was more like 200,000, and it certainly wasn't done in a gas chamber. He also said, however, if new facts come forward that refutes this, then I will obviously have to change my opinion using the new evidence that is put forward. This is where everyone, patriotard to white nationalist, fail miserably. When they get hold of a conspiracy theory or an idea, they never let it go. It doesn't matter if new information comes forward, if they don't like it, if it discredits their theory or their ideas, they immediately attack the new information. They attack the individual who is presenting the new information. They will not entertain new ideas. To them, it's their way or the highway. This is where radio in general has failed the public. Radio used to be the fourth estate. It was journalism in general. The newspapers, it was the fourth estate. Their job was to go out and report the facts, report the news, educate the people, keep the people informed. Today it is nothing but a propaganda arm for the government. They just repeat what they are handed through the news wires. And the news wires get their information from the government and the various political parties and special interest groups, corporations, which are all the same thing. It's all the government. Who can argue today that America's, or let's say multinational corporations or America's corporations, are not directly tied to the government? Who can argue this? The bailout? The government owns the banks, and it's going to own the car companies here very shortly. I mean, it's an idiotic argument. There is no capitalism. There is no free enterprise in this country. We're living in a socialist country, socialist Marxist country. You can give it all the names you want, but all of these ideas were created by one group of people known as Jews. Whether it was Marxism, socialism, neoconservatism, liberal Democrats, all of these various ideologies and political systems were all invented by Jews for the sake of doing one thing, destroying Western civilization. That is the net result of all of these systems. What is the net result of perpetual revolution? Kevin MacDonald spoke about this. E. Michael Jones has spoken about this. The fact that the Jews promote revolution is almost like this is their goal with whatever system they live within, whatever country, government, the idea is to promote revolution. Now there's only one result. Revolution, for the sake of revolution, leads to the destruction of civilization. Now you have to be pretty stupid and pretty naive to believe that their goal is simply to destroy. Destruction for the sake of destruction it seems to be a fruitless goal. And I don't think the Jews are a very stupid people. I don't believe that they are that nearsighted to actually believe that revolution for the sake of revolution, destruction for the sake of destruction, is a worthwhile goal to pursue for the last 1,500 years. No, the reason, there's only one reason to pursue revolution for the sake of revolution, or let's say perpetual revolution in Western civilization, that is to destroy Western civilization. And the reason why you would destroy Western civilization is to erect a new civilization in its place. And I would bet the cow and the farm that the reason why the Jews wish to see the end of Western civilization is so they may create their own civilization in their own image, run by their own people. This is the goal. This is heaven on earth for the Jews. This is, they've said as much in their religious, philosophical texts, their cult texts, and their political texts. Back in the conference in the 1800s, they had a conference in Basel, Switzerland, where all of the Zionists got together. There was a merging of religious Jews, Jews involved in the occult, political Jews, Zionists all got together and set forth their plan for world domination, set forth their plan for the takeover of Western civilization, its destruction, and then the creation of a new Jewish empire, a heaven on earth, a Jew world empire, if you will. This happened, again, during the meeting in the 1800s. I think it was 1820. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you the date. I'm really bad with dates, but it was the 1800s. Basel, Switzerland. The Protocols of Zion are supposedly a document that covered the agenda of that meeting. Now, I don't really care if the protocols are a forgery. I don't care if there's an accurate depiction of what happened. All I know is it's happening. And what you can read the protocols on your own, and the protocols are very accurate in depicting what is happening today. Again, I'm not endorsing the protocols because it's a discredited document, but it is uncanny and weird and strange that this document is so damn accurate with its depiction of the state of affairs in the world today. Now, having said that, we do know one thing that is true. And as the Bishop Richard Williamson said, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad as long as it's the truth. The truth is all that matters. It is not a bad thing if it's true. You have to understand this. This should always be your barometer with whatever you do in life. This is what the Catholic Church teaches. This is why you know, a man like Richard Williamson is so clear, so concise, so eloquent in his rebuttal of his critics. The critics can call him names, they can call him anti-Semite, they can call him Nazi or racist, whatever terms they can come up with. But the man is telling the truth. He's using the facts that are available, and this, my friends, is something that eludes the majority of people today in broadcasting, the majority of people today in the news, the majority of people today in politics, the majority of people today in the patriotard world, white nationalists, they do not understand that truth and facts are more important than anything else, more important than ratings, more important than drawing an audience, more important than being popular, more important than selling videos, DVDs. This is not a game, my friends. This is about civilization and whether it will survive. A man like Bishop Richard Williamson is one of the most dangerous men in the world today with regards to the Jewish world order. Bishop Richard Williamson is very well spoken. His answers are very well thought out. Now compare this to the rantings of many of the white nationalist broadcasters you've heard on the air. Compare that to the rantings of these other broadcasters. Who do you think the average Joe is going to listen to? Right now, this one interview with Richard Williamson, Bishop Richard Williamson, is going to be heard by millions of people. Millions of good people. People that raise families. People that go to church. People that are looking for answers but don't know what's going on today. They don't have any idea what is happening to us. And here is Bishop Richard Williamson giving you a very clear, concise answer with regards to the biggest, well, let's see, if you want to believe what the white nationalists say, this is the cornerstone of the Jewish control of our culture, the Holocaust. They say if we can destroy the Holocaust lie, then we destroy the grip the Jews have over our civilization. I don't agree. I think this is something that many years ago somebody came up with this idea. One of the white nationalist leaders, maybe it was Dr. William Pierce, I don't know. But somebody came up with this idea and decided this was it. This is what we got to focus on. Destroying the Holocaust myth. But you know, it is important, but it's not today. It is not the answer. It is not going to change much the way it stands. Now, it evolves. Things evolve. There are changes. There are new facts that are revealed. New people that jump on board and want to promote the facts around the Holocaust. But whether or not we subscribe to the Holocaust or not, it doesn't seem to me, as Mark Weber pointed out in his article recently, it doesn't seem to me like it's going to be the end of all. It's not going to be the silver bullet we're looking for. I believe the way to, number one, discredit the Holocaust myth, if it is indeed false, which I would agree with the bishop, the evidence I've seen shows it to be false. I don't see 6 million Jews perishing in gas chambers. I don't see any evidence of the Nazis, in particular Adolf Hitler, proposing a plan to exterminate Jews in gas chambers. I've not seen any evidence of this anywhere. I've not seen any documents showing that Hitler was proposing this idea, and the Germans being very good, excellent record keepers. I just can't believe there's not a document floating around somewhere with Hitler's signature on it saying that the plan is to exterminate Jews in gas chambers. It just doesn't exist. And there are other factors, you know, involved, forensics, and of course this report that Bishop Williamson refers to. So there's a lot of evidence out there right now showing that the Holocaust story is indeed a story, a myth. It is not factual. It is based in emotion. It is based in hysteria. And it has been used to create what I call white guilt. The Holocaust story was imperative to create this white guilt. But now that it's in place, it is very difficult to destroy the myth with the average Joe. The way I would do it, if white nationalists came to me and said, Peter Shannon, we want you to advise us on the best plan of action to destroy the Holocaust myth, or at least shed light on it. How do we do it? The way you do it, the way you get the most traction from the media, from the public, you want public support. You want to win the hearts and minds of the people. You're not going to win the hearts and minds of the people by pushing Holocaust denial. People that hear this are conditioned from the day, the very first day they walk into a public school, that the Jews were gassed. They were victims. They are the victims of all time. They were tortured, beaten, gassed by Nazis. This is the story you see on television, radio, movies, over the internet, in public schools, on and on and on. So that is a very difficult approach when you have people that are so conditioned, just like in Clockwork Orange, when they would try to condition Malcolm McLaren to become a pacifist. This is almost like shock therapy. And when you tell people that the Holocaust didn't happen, that was a lie, immediately their response is going to be, you're an anti-Semite. You're a racist. You're a Jew hater. You're a Nazi, so on and so forth. So this is a no-win situation. However, if you want to get public support for your cause, you need to open up the doors to research from credited people in the field of history, in the field of forensics, in the field of anthropology, you name it. Right now, the doors are closed. As the bishop stated in his interview, he said it's against the law in Germany to talk about the Holocaust and counter the popular 6 million number. This is an offense that can land you in jail. The only way we are going to open the doors to research, and through that research we will garner the facts necessary to repudiate and refute the Jewish line regarding the 6 million number. The only way to do this, with the ultimate goal of annihilating the Holocaust myth, is to promote this issue with the public as a free speech issue. Freedom of speech resonates through the populace worldwide much more than Holocaust denial. Holocaust denial, people will cringe, look the other way, start vomiting, pissing in their pants. This is something that scares the hell out of everyone. The only people that will listen to you are the people that are already informed, the people that have the intellectual honesty to read the facts, to read the historical account, to read the new information that has been put forth that disputes the 6 million number. They will not listen to you if you hit them over the head with a club known as Holocaust denial. However, most people aren't aware that in many European countries, to research the Holocaust and come up with a counter theory regarding the gas chambers, Auschwitz, the 6 million number, this is an offense that can land you in jail. And most people in this country are not aware of this. Holocaust denial is an Orwellian crime. It is a thought crime. This is something that most people will not support if it is presented to them in this light. Most people do not want to live in a Big Brother world, 1984, a la George Orwell. Most people still believe in freedom of speech today. And most people would be very, very offended, very, very shocked if they knew that a historical researcher could not go into the era of World War II and study the Holocaust, and using the facts that he digs up, even new facts that might refute the 6 million number, he cannot publish his work without going to jail in some countries. Now, this has to stop. This is the only way that you will get researchers and historians to go out and actually look into this topic. This is a topic that is long overdue. It is long overdue with regards to research, honest research from credited researchers, scientists, historians, anthropologists, independent researchers, amateur researchers. This is a historical event like any other, but it is against the law. Most people don't realize this. If we were to bring this to the public's attention, we would get support to repeal Holocaust denial laws. We would get support from the public that would show the ADL for what it is. The ADL is the main group that's going around the world pushing for hate speech laws, pushing for Holocaust denial laws, and they are a group that believes in censorship. They are a group that wants to homogenize all racial groups. And this is something that is very offensive to most freedom-loving Americans and most people living in the West. But they are unaware of what's going on. So this is an opportunity for white nationalism and any freedom-loving people, any people that love history, lovers of history, people that believe in intellectual honesty. This is an opportunity to show the ADL up for what they really are. Liars. They are a group that believes in censorship, and this is something that does not float in a free country. But as long as we take the path of Holocaust denial, Holocaust is a lie. Didn't happen. Holocaust is a lie. The average Joe is going to cringe and walk away. And I think our goal, if I'm not mistaken, on this network especially, is to talk to the mainstream, to speak to the man who feels like he has been ostracized from society, the man who feels that the world has gone insane, that the inmates are running the asylum. And this is the mainstream, my friends, not the people that watch Fox News and CNN or are cheerleaders for the war in Iraq. The mainstream, my friends, are the white American males that are watching their country go down the drain every day. They see it disintegrate a little bit more. They see the urbanization, the Africanization of their country, of their culture. They see the legacy that was left to them by their ancestors deteriorating. And they are the majority still in this country and in the West. The white male. These are the people that we speak to. Now, the trick to overturn the Jewish stranglehold on our culture and on this Holocaust myth, the trick is to speak to the white male in the mainstream, to motivate him specifically, at the same time making the message universal enough that other groups of people will support the concept of freedom of speech. Who will not support that concept? This concept transcends racial borders, gender borders. This transcends the differences between all of us. Freedom of speech. Censorship. This is something that the Jews used effectively to make pornography popular and legal in this country. People would not support pornography originally because it was immoral. The only way they were able to get pornography, the only way they made pornography legal was to make it a freedom of speech issue. This tactic worked well, and a majority of people supported it. And as a result, pornography is with us today, everywhere. We've got 14-year-old girls that they're so well versed in sex. A generation prior to them didn't know half the things the girls know today. I mean, on the internet, there's nothing left to the imagination. Every vile act is available on the internet for free to view. This is also the tactic used for, for civil rights. It became not an issue of black power, but an issue of freedom, of equality. But in reality, it was a play made by the Jews originally to put blacks and other non-whites in power of institutions, in control of institutions in white society. It gave them an opportunity for placement in positions of power in the various white governments around the world, specifically the United States. They've got the most, they've gained the most ground here in this country, as you can see by who our president is. But this happened because Jews used the tactic of freedom of speech. They used the tactic of equality, egalitarianism. All of these issues have resonance within the general public. Abortion, another tactic that was employed, not the obvious, women have the right to abort their fetuses because they want to have sex and not worry about raising a child. That wouldn't float. So the tactic was used that this is a freedom issue, an issue of privacy, an issue of choice. Women have freedom of choice. Who can argue with that? Women have the right to control their bodies. This was the tactic used, not women should be able to abort children because they can't have promiscuous sex and have to raise all these children, all these bastards, out of wedlock. They'd rather just get rid of them. And the net result, of course, is a negative birth rate in the white population. It is also a contributing factor to the immorality that we accept in this country today. The fact that our country has devolved into one of the most immoral, if not the most immoral, societies in the history of the world. We've just elected a man who is a ex-cocaine junkie. He is a bisexual, according to some reports, among other things. Who could have been elected 30, 40 years ago if they had admitted they were a cocaine addict, or had done cocaine, or smoked crack, or smoked marijuana? Who could have been elected to the presidency 30, 40 years ago admitting this? Who could have been elected to the presidency with rumors from eyewitnesses that the man is bisexual? Who could have been elected? No one. But today, my friends, bisexuality, no big deal. We witness Madonna and Britney Spears with their lovely kiss on national television for all the little kids to see. Movie after movie showing lesbians and bisexuals and perverts. And that's just on network television. How about movie theaters? Can you say Brokeback Mountain? So today, cocaine, crack, porno, homosexuality, perversion, it doesn't matter. The only frontier left is the legalization of sex with children and, of course, sex with animals. And don't kid yourself, that's right down the road. Right down the road. You will see it in your lifetimes. You will see it in the next 20 years. You will see sex with animals, sex with children being acceptable behavior in this country if things continue down the road we are traveling. Now, I want to get back to this topic. And I want to get back to this article regarding the Pope and the bishop he just brought back into the Catholic Church, Bishop Richard Williamson. I want to get back to this after a brief intermission break. But once again, I want to just end this break, end this segment with this idea in a nutshell. The way to destroy the Holocaust myth, if that is indeed what it is, and again, if you look at the evidence, the historical evidence, it indeed appears to be a myth. It does look like something that was concocted to create white guilt, to motivate the people using fear. It does not look like 6 million Jews were gassed by any stretch of the imagination, if you study the historical record. So if people in the audience that are involved in Holocaust revisionism want to sincerely destroy this myth in the next 10 years, you must shift gears from Holocaust denial to freedom of speech. This is the way to get public support. This is the way to get these laws repealed that frighten researchers away, that prevent honest research into this topic. You must shift gears. This is my advice to you. If I was your tactician, if you hired me to be a media consultant, this is my information to you. This is my advice, my suggestion. You want to motivate people for your cause, shift gears. Once you repeal these laws worldwide, once you make the public aware of the censorship going on, the violation of basic human rights, of freedom of speech, basic God-given rights, once you make them realize this is happening, these laws have no chance of standing. Who would support a law that believes in any kind of freedom that states the truth is no defense? And that indeed is the law in Canada, right up the road here, right up the border. In Canada, if you are a Holocaust denier, the truth is no defense. Doesn't matter if you have the evidence, the facts to back up what you're saying. The fact that you insulted a protected group in Canada will land you in jail. This has to be stopped. This is the bigger problem. And in doing so, you shed light on the ADL and what they're really up to, and you discredit this organization and show people what these individuals are really all about. They are no better than the people they call Nazis. The picture they've painted for people with regards to Nazis, authoritarian, dictators, Big Brother, Orwellian, thought crimes, thought police, SS, Gestapo. This is the Jew, my friends. This is the Jew basically creating a myth regarding Nazis. But in reality, they're revealing what they're all about. They're the ones that go out and force governments to ante up billions of dollars so that the Jews won't boycott them, or they won't, you know, write articles about them, or they won't attack them in public, or attack their administration, or get news stories printed in the newspaper. Holocaust. We will go out and tell people, you're Nazis if you don't give us $10 billion for the Holocaust survivors. This is the tactic that they accuse the Nazis of. This is extortion. The idea that they can control speech and control thought from a little office in America, somewhere in America, the ADL, can control people in Germany, people in Canada, and other European countries. They can control these people by forcing the governments to pass laws that prohibit freedom of speech with anything having to do with Jews or the Holocaust. This is absolutely incredible. Yet most people don't understand this. This is the way you gain public support. You shed light on this. You make it known. And you turn this into a freedom of speech issue. Once you destroy these impediments that the ADL has erected around the world, all of a sudden the floodgates open. You have Holocaust research everywhere. Everyone jumps in then and studies this event and comes up with what really happened. And at that point, your Holocaust myth is no more. But until white nationalists come to this awakening and take this shift in tactics and rhetoric, you will continue to be marginalized. You will continue to be hated. You will continue to be looked upon as lunatics by the average Joe. And that's why you're not dangerous. And that's why many Jews support white nationalist speakers, white nationalist groups, because they serve a purpose. They discredit the cause of white nationalism more than help it. They discredit it and hinder it more than further the goal of white nationalism. If our goal is to get more listeners, or let's say more supporters of white nationalism, then we need to use the tools that are available. We need, number one, to speak the truth using the available facts. Number two, we need to start fashioning our rhetoric, fashioning our statements to appeal to the average listener, not to the choir. We need to stop using profanity. We need to stop speaking about these things in profane terms. This shuts down most people's attention span. When they hear someone cursing and ranting and raving, at that point, they just shut down. They go to the next station. They might think it's funny. They might think it's entertaining. You might get a lot of hits on your website. But my friends, don't kid yourself. A lot of hits on a website. I always hear this. Well, Stormfront, man, they've got a million hits. They've got this and this website and that website and VNN and VOR and Joe Blow's website and Johnny Jones' website. Well, you have to realize most people are going to these websites. Well, the motivation is much like that of a rubbernecker on a highway. They're slowing down to look at the car wreck. That's what they're doing. They're not on the website to learn anything or to help, you know, put an end to this Jew world order monkey grip. No, they're not there to help. They're there to look at the car wreck, to view the carnage, to watch how stupid white people are. This is why we don't have any, our message does not resonate. And this is why I do not belong to a white nationalist group. And this is why I do not support white nationalism in its current state, its current form. I support many of the ideas, many of the principles, many of the basic goals, but I do not support any organization as it stands today. Because the organizations today are either anti-Christian, they are anti-Western civilization, they are anti-sanity, anti-logic, anti-reason. They are just out there they're out there to rant and rave because their organization is built on one thing. They hate Jews. They hate black people. That's not how you build an organization. You don't build an organization on what you dislike and what you hate. You have to stand for something. And as it is now, well, I stand for the white race. Well, that doesn't resonate. That's not good enough. What else do you stand for? Well, we don't like the damn Jews, and we don't like the niggers and the spicks. And, oh, well, that's great. Okay, but what do you stand for? Well, you know, white race, man, white people. Okay, well, once you destroy the existing system, what are you going to replace it with? Well, I don't know. They're like the pagans and the old Germans and our ancestors back in the old. It's just all gibberish. There is no answer. They attack Christianity, but they offer no substitute for the moral order that Christianity brings. This is why the Jews want to destroy Christianity, specifically the Catholic Church. It is the original form of Christianity. It is the first church. This church must be destroyed because once the root is destroyed, the other factions of Christianity wither away. They lose credibility. This is why you see the full court press in the news. You see the full court press to attack Catholic priests. You see the full court press to attack Catholics because they don't subscribe to the idea of killing children in the womb. They attack the Catholics because they have a prayer that is considered anti-Semitic because the Catholics blame the Jews for the crucifixion of Christ. Oh my God, how could they do that? Well, because the Jews did crucify Christ. Well, the Romans really did it. Oh yeah, well okay, what's Charlie Manson doing in jail? Did he actually stab the LaBiancas? No, he had his buddy go down there and do it. Tex Watson stabbed the LaBiancas. Tex Watson killed Sharon Tate. And the rest of the Manson family did the dirty work, but Manson laid the plans. So if Manson is in jail for those murders, even though he never stabbed anyone, well, how can you justify that and say, well, the Jews really didn't do it? It was the Romans. Well, no, the Jews wanted Jesus crucified. And in fact, they freed a murderer to make sure Jesus was crucified. Now, this is the type of double talk that people buy into today. So it is imperative for them to destroy the Catholic Church, and this is their goal. This is why they print stories like this about Bishop Richard Williamson. Now, what they fail to realize is that Williamson is no Mel Gibson. When he was confronted by this reporter regarding his previous statements on the Holocaust, he didn't cringe. He didn't backpedal. He didn't apologize. He said, yeah, I said that. And here's what I mean. Now compare that to Mel Gibson, who went on the air and apologized to, you know, every Jew he could meet, every Jew within the internet. This guy went everywhere. He went to Jewish encounter meetings to get absolution from his Jewish masters in Hollywood. So this is the type of person that they like. You know, Mel Gibson was a very good spokesman for Western civilization at one time, but has been completely discredited by his actions. The fact that when he was confronted with his words and deeds, he backpedaled and made himself look like a hypocrite and like a coward. On the other hand, Bishop Richard Williamson stood firm and explained very eloquently how, I'm sorry, my friend, the facts show the Holocaust did not occur the way you've been told. 6 million Jews did not die in a gas chamber. This is why Bishop Williamson is the most dangerous man right now for the Jew world order. So many people saw this, and the little light switch went off in their head. He wasn't screaming and yelling, using profanity, calling the Jews names. He was very unemotional, very simple, very plain spoken, very precise. This needs to be the approach of all people that come forward to discuss the Holocaust. We have to stop acting like 14-year-old kids on a schoolyard, calling Jews kikes because it sounds funny. No, it doesn't sound funny. It's not the way you get your message across. And you certainly don't get your message across by hating someone so much that it blurs your vision and blurs your judgment and your ability to decipher the evidence. People will see through that and realize that you make no sense. So we'll get back to this after a brief intermission break. You are listening to Shank Talk Worldwide. I am your host, Peter Shank, and I am fighting the war of perception one day a week, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, 7 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, what else? I don't know. That's it. We'll be right back. Don't go away because there is more.
About infrastructure. It seems to me that infrastructure spending is a very important and good way of stimulating the economy. The challenge will be to do it quickly, to find projects that can be done that have a high social return, that also can be done with the greatest speed possible. I am concerned, as I'm sure many of you are, that these jobs not simply go to high-skilled people who are already professionals or to white male construction workers. I have nothing against white male construction workers. I'm just saying that there are a lot of other people who have needs as well. And therefore, in my remarks, I have suggested to you, and I'm certainly happy to talk about it more, ways in which the money can be, criteria can be set so that the money does go to others, the long-term unemployed, minorities, women, people who are not necessarily construction workers or high-skilled professionals.
First of all, there's no question we should give as much help to the states as we can. We have vehicles to do that. But with so many of our infrastructure problems, the state legislature wants their fingerprints on everything that goes through. And my great city of New York lost hundreds of billions of dollars destined for the city because they couldn't get cooperation from our state legislature. So we're going to have to find some way to establish formulas to expedite this, where governors are going to be forced to find some formula to find out how can we get the money where the hemorrhages are. And whether Harlem is going to compete with it, Newark is not nearly as important if at the end of the day we know where the joblessness are, where the fears are, and that we can get the federal formulas to target the relief to these communities once they meet that criteria. Remove the discretion. Identify the need through numbers and get help there as swiftly as possible. And one thing that you can depend on, you don't have to be worried about what the middle class is going to do. Things are so bad. They have to put food on their tables, get clothes for their kids, get them in school. I think this is a tremendous opportunity for a stronger America. I'm glad so much that you agree in theory. But I'm asking Dr. Reich, don't you think mechanically we can get rid of some of the fears that you express by mandating the criteria and the formulas?
Andy was right.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. I think the formulas and criteria ought to be mandated. Governors should be given a choice of either signing on the bottom line or not. They should be held accountable. They should not be held up in state legislatures.
Another talk show host focuses on Catholics, and another focuses on Jews all day. Another, you know, and I'm sorry, I've just studied society and history. There's evil people running every group in every major nation, evil in high places. And the new World Order is in control of all of those major groups. And so when we go on air and we bash Jews or we bash Catholics or we bash Protestants or we bash, what's the other group I was mentioning? You know, any of these groups, the people, the Masons, the people that are members of that, 99% of Masons don't even know that there's degrees above the 33rd degree. They think 33rd's it. And the masters, you know, the Masons that get up to the 33rd level, they're not supposed to tell the porch Masons, the outer Masons, what's going on. So you get up here and you bash a bunch of Masons. And then people who are Masons know that George Washington was one, the founders of Texas were, and they weren't evil men. So then they think, well, I'm not evil, and I'm in a fraternal order raising money for kids, and this is just a good old boys club. How dare people lie about us? See, if you just approach it and attack them that way, instead of showing them, no, this is how they control good people, and this is what is above it, this is how they're leading you around by the nose, thinking you're part of something good and big. Just like they've recruited 23,000 corporate execs, and they're trying to double back.
This song goes out to all the Patriotards in the audience and all the broadcasters on Patriotard Radio. This is from me to you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Shank Talk Worldwide. I'm your host, Peter Shank. You know, I have nothing but utter contempt for patriotard broadcasters. I want to tell you this right now. I think they are more spineless than the Sean Hannitys of the world, than the Rush Limbaughs, than the Bill O'Reillys. And I say that in all, with all due respect. They are an impediment to people that really care about the truth and really want to hear all the facts. They specialize in taking a topic and isolating it as if it lives in, or as if it exists in a vacuum. The idea that there are good people and bad people in all racial groups is a non sequitur. The idea that there are good and bad people throughout history is a non sequitur. The idea that there are bad white people and there are bad Jews and bad Mexicans and blacks is a non sequitur. The issue is not the characteristics of good and bad people and the racial groups they belong to. The issue is who's in control now. Who is in control? What does that mean? What is your definition of control? Is it who runs the banks? How about who runs the media? How about who runs the army? Who runs corporations, scientific research, public schools? What is your definition of control? And then what is the New World Order and what does it control? Now, oddly enough, every one of those institutions I mentioned just now is controlled by a group of people known as Jews. This is not my word that I invented to disparage them or to insult them. This is what they call themselves. They also say they are part of the same tribe. Now, to attack me personally and attack other broadcasters that want to bring out this fact regarding Jews is completely, it's a fallacious argument. And it is also deceptive. Yes, we can make these great philosophical existential arguments about what is really, who is really bad, and there are good and bad people everywhere. And I mean, you can go on and on and on. But it's just a straw man. It's just a way to basically lead the horse away from the water. Why do you think I was fired from RBN unceremoniously? And I don't want to bring this up over and over, but I did notice that people were discussing it on the internet recently on the website, so I thought I would chime in with my response. They didn't fire me because I was on the air talking about Jews in a disrespectful manner, or I was ranting and raving about the Jew, the Jew, the Jew, or the nigger and the spick and all this crap. No, I didn't use profanity, and I only use it now for the effect. I'm using profanity to show you what some people do on the air. I don't use those words. I definitely don't use those words to describe other human beings. I don't want to get ugly or dehumanize other people. I want to bring out facts. I want to bring out the truth. I want you to make up your own mind. That's not a fair tactic to use, any more than it's a fair tactic to assassinate a person's character simply because you disagree with them. Now, this is a very popular tactic used by Jews, used by patriotards and everyone else in the media. It is not a tactic that I use when I disagree with someone. I disagree with them on the facts. I disagree with them on the tactics they may use. Now, I was not fired from RBN because I spoke about Jews and I was a racist or a self-proclaimed racist or any other kind of racist. I was fired because I brought a reasonable voice to the airwaves with regards to the topic of the Jewish world order and more importantly, the topic of race. I was on a radio station that is a patriotard radio station. We spoke to what I would consider the average Joe. They're not the guys that watch Fox News over and over and believe in all the crap that the media promotes, but they do listen to, they are mainstream people, and they listen to internet radio, shortwave radio, and they listen to the various broadcasters that discuss things that a patriotic American would support and be interested in discussing. Now, when I discussed topics of race that other talk show hosts wouldn't discuss, and of course topics of the various aspects of the Jew world order, I would not try to sensationalize it like, well, Hal Turner, for instance. And Hal Turner, you know, I'm not gonna disparage the man, but I don't agree with his tactics. The man, other than that, is a decent man, from what I know, but his tactics are very questionable. The fact that the man is not in a prison right now, after all the things he's said and written on the internet, well, he's either the luckiest man in the world, he has great connections, or something else. I don't know. But that's another topic altogether. The point is, I was fired from RBN because I brought a reasonable, logical face to the topic of race. This is what the establishment fears. This is what the Jew media fears. This is what all of the various institutions that benefit from the status quo today fear. They fear logic and reason and someone who can come out and be a well-spoken, unemotional, professional broadcaster and give people the facts and let them make up their own mind. They don't want someone coming on the air that criticizes the Constitution or the Founding Fathers and does it in a very logical, reasonable way. This is what Bill White, my guest, did. Now, I'm not a supporter of Bill White, never have been. I'm not a supporter of his organizations, but I did believe the man had the right to speak at the time. I still believe he has the right to speak, and I had him on my program to give his point of view. I also had Alex Linder on the program. I also had Martin Lindstedt on the program, and Glenn Miller on the program as well, and some other people. But needless to say, whenever I interviewed these individuals, I did not criticize them. I did not attack them. I did not jump up and down and call them names like Bill O'Reilly when they would bring up points regarding the Constitution and the people that quote-unquote worship the Constitution. They brought up some very, very good points and ones that are important enough for most people to consider. In fact, one lady called up and was so impressed by Bill White, she decided to become a Nazi. But I mean, that's neither here nor there. That's her choice. It's not for me to criticize or to attack people for their political beliefs or whatever they believe is right. I'm not a Nazi, never have been. I don't support Nazis, but on the other hand, I'm not afraid of what they have to say, and they make some good points on various topics, as well as other groups make good points. The Muslims, the black Muslims, make some good points. But needless to say, I was relieved of my duties because I was not a fanatic. I was not someone who came on the air and showboated these topics, which would have been very easy to do. I would have probably had a lot more listeners, even though the show was the second highest rated show on that network. And I think it would have been the first highest rated show if I hadn't been on such a bad time slot. But that's another story. At any rate, this is why Richard Williamson and people like him are so dangerous because they bring a reasonable voice to the topic of the Holocaust. They bring a reasonable voice, and this is why people are so frightened. The Jewish world order is so desperate, so frightened of this individual. Now, very quickly, I want to shift gears. We did have an interview with Mark Weber scheduled. Again, we had some major problems with the interview regarding the technical aspects of it. It was recorded on a computer. The files were, they were corrupted somehow. We did get the files back in order, but it still requires some massive editing. I'm going to finish it up tonight, and hopefully we'll have this interview posted on the website for you by tonight or tomorrow, in addition to this two-hour broadcast. So you'll actually have 3 hours of Peter Schenck. This week you'll have 2 hours today and another hour with the Mark Weber interview either this evening or tomorrow. And it is an excellent interview, I might say, I might add. Mark, he had some great points to make, so I do encourage you to listen to the interview. And I also have an interview next week. My guest next week will be Matthew Raphael Johnson from the American Free Press. And this, for me, was a real pleasure. The man, I don't know, he was actually an inspiration to me, and some of the trials and tribulations I've been going through recently. He doesn't realize it, but I just thought I'd mention that. What he said, without knowing it, he really inspired me. I hope he inspires some of you out there as well. Now, we had a recording over the break with Charlie Rangel and Robert Reich regarding this bailout that's coming up. And the bailout, I want to briefly give you a rundown of what happened just now with the mortgage crisis and the financial breakdown. This is what occurred. The government compelled mortgage companies with the big carrot, a profit, more money, more profit, easy money, easy making a quick buck. They said, look, we need you to give loans to people that can't afford to pay their loans. And the mortgage companies would say, well, why would we do that? That's crazy. Well, you can have it backed by the government, and so if it fails, we'll pay you back. And you can also, in the meantime, you can collect higher interest rates on those bad loans. So the mortgage company said, well, you know, it's not a good idea, but it sure is a good idea for us to make extra money. So they agreed to follow the guidelines the government set for giving loans to blacks, Mexicans, non-whites, single mothers, people on welfare. Now, the way they were able to make these loans look legitimate, they had to show verifiable income. Now, the verifiable income was stacked or beefed up with welfare. Welfare became fair game for verifiable income. So if a person was unemployed and collected unemployment and had welfare payments coming in, food stamps, so on and so forth, all of that was considered verifiable income. So all they would need, for instance, would be 2 years of income tax showing they made $20,000 a year for 2 years. And then that year, the last year, they went on unemployment. So unemployment, the unemployment payments were added to their projected income for the third year. So even though they lost their job the 2 years prior to that, they would project another year for $20,000. And then they would also add in unemployment benefits, welfare payments, food stamps. All of this became fair game and verifiable income. So now non-whites and single mothers. And let's not forget, they added insult to injury by giving this opportunity to illegal aliens. So all of these various groups now were able to collect welfare, unemployment, food stamps, and use that as verifiable income. So all of a sudden now, on paper, you have illegal aliens, you have blacks, Mexicans, you have single mothers making $30,000, $40,000 a year. So it seems like, okay, we can give them a loan. It looks good on paper. So the majority of these loans they gave out were to people that were on welfare. Bottom line, they weren't working, they were on welfare. And once they did this, they turned those loans into paper commodities. In other words, people could buy stocks based on those loans. And these stocks were traded. Now here's the good part. Here's the real fun part. These stocks acted like a virus. And they went worldwide. People in Iceland bought these stocks. People in Europe bought these stocks. They were all betting on the American real estate market. Now, everything was going very well for a while because all of these homes were being purchased by illegal aliens, by welfare mothers, by blacks, by non-whites, Mexicans, you name it. And then enter the real estate speculator. They figured out a way to take advantage of the zero down mortgage and this easy credit. So they started purchasing homes without even using their own money. They'd buy four or five homes like that. But what they would do is they would sell the homes immediately after they refurbished the home. And then they would sell the home and then they'd pay back the bank. Well, that was fine because these real estate speculators paid off the loan. So as long as the real estate speculator paid off the loan, then there was no problem. That's called flipping houses. That's how a lot of people have become millionaires. There's nothing illegal about it. There's nothing immoral. In fact, it helps the economy because people buy a property, they fix it up, and they make it habitable, thank you, and then they rent it out or they sell it to another family that is looking for a home. This is the way it works. The banks get paid, everyone makes money, everyone's happy, and the people that bought the home have a beautiful place to live. Now, while this is going on, these mortgages were turned into stocks. People bought stocks all over the world, betting on the American real estate market. Now, here's where it all falls apart. Illegal aliens, non-whites, women, single mothers could make the payments. They were living in nice neighborhoods they could not afford normally. They did not belong in those neighborhoods. They had no right to be there. They did not earn the right to be there. In other words, they didn't save their money. They didn't work, save money, make a down payment, and have a job and make payments on the home, blah, blah, blah. No, they were just basically given the home by the government using welfare as verifiable income. So they live there for a few years, and finally they decide for one reason or another, I'm not going to make any more payments. What are they going to do, kick me out? Yes, indeed, they started kicking people out. They started foreclosing on all of these homes that were owned by illegal aliens. When they decided that they didn't like America anymore, or they wanted to go back to Mexico because they had saved enough money to be very wealthy men in Mexico, or because they got in trouble with the law, whatever the reason is, people stopped making payments on the mortgage. Now the mortgages all went south. Now when that happened, the real estate speculator, now this is where he enters. The homes that he purchased went down in value because of the foreclosures in those neighborhoods. all of those foreclosures made home values go down. So real estate speculators were now holding on to mortgages on homes that were worth less than the original mortgage. Now, anyone in the audience who's taken any real estate classes, and I had a real estate license in Los Angeles many years ago, so I know what I'm speaking of here. Rule one in real estate is OPM. That's called other people's money. Rule number two, when the home is worth less than the mortgage, walk away. Just walk away. That's the smartest thing to do. This is what they teach you in real estate, because it's not about emotion. It's not even about morality. It's about one thing, you know, how to make money in the real estate market. And this is what they did. This is what speculators do. When the homes become, when they go down in value and they're worth less than the original mortgage, they walk away. So we have speculators now walking away, not paying back the loans, not paying back the banks. So now, here's where it gets good. Remember that little virus that went all over the world known as paper commodities? Stocks in the American real estate market that the Icelandic people had and the British banks had and other Europeans had bought into? Well, now that the banks were sitting on all these bad loans that everybody walked away from or couldn't pay back, all those stocks went south as well as the banks. The banks that secured those loans and the banks that, you know, guaranteed those stocks all went south. And with that went those stocks. And with that went all of those economies in Iceland and Europe that had bet on that stock market. This is what happened in the financial crisis. Now, what did we learn from the financial crisis? What did our government learn? What did our media learn? Absolutely nothing. In fact, what they want to do now is make it where white people, especially white males, that's when Reich was talking about white construction workers, he was talking about white heterosexual males. That's what he was talking about. No, we're not going to give these loans to real estate speculators. We're not going to give these loans to white men. We are going to design loans now that specifically go to minorities, illegal aliens, and women, single mothers. This is what Charlie Rangel was talking about when he was saying that he wanted to do away with the state's discretion, their discretionary measures, how they divvied out the cash. They want to set federal guidelines that prohibit the state from saying anything about it at all, because they want to make sure that all those loans, these new loans are going to create, go to minorities and women, single women, and illegal aliens, because they want to continue the process of integrating, or a better word, the urbanization of suburbia. They want to go into all those suburban areas in the United States that whites fled to, that whites went to escape the urban crime, the urban filth, the urban gangs. Urban meaning non-white. Urban meaning blacks, predominantly blacks, and now Mexicans, because that is the new threat in the urban areas. These groups destroyed America's cities, so whites fled into suburbia. So the government decided, well, they're still living in segregated neighborhoods, even though it's legal, and they're doing it because these blacks and Mexicans and single mothers can't afford to pay for loans and to make payments on homes. We're going to give them a little hand, a little leg up. We are going to create loans and bring these basically urban gangs, welfare mothers, illegal aliens into white suburbia, so we can further our destruction of Western civilization, so we can bring our constituency into red state America. This is a way for the Democrats to destroy red state America as well. It's just, it goes on. It's so insidious. But this is what they're doing now. So what they're saying is, we don't care if affirmative action policies in the home loan market caused this financial disaster that went worldwide. We are going to do it again. We are going to do it again, and they're going to go out and they're going to give these loans out again, but they're going to make it much more difficult for real estate investors to make any money in the market, because they're going to make the laws more stringent for these people, mainly the white male who invests in real estate. Let's be honest here. Middle class America, upper and lower middle class, is predominantly white, and it is predominantly white male. This is the enemy of the Jew world order. This is the target group that they're trying to eliminate. And they're going to do so with affirmative action policies that integrate these suburban areas with people that are violent, that raise children in a fatherless home, so the children grow up, especially the young males, they grow up uncivilized, violent, and they're more prone to join gangs, take drugs, so on and so forth. This is what they want to do to suburbia. They want to completely urbanize it, Africanize it, destroy it. Once suburbia is destroyed, middle-class America, for all intent and purpose, is destroyed. And this, my friends, is where the New World Order, Jew World Order, whatever you want to call it, steps in, and we enter the next phase, which could be the last phase, I don't know, but it is the next phase of our one world government, of a society that is so lawless, so out of control. We beg the government to put up surveillance cameras, to have tanks roaming the streets, so that our children won't be murdered as they go to school. If you want to see more of this and want to get an idea of what the future looks like after middle class America is fully Africanized and destroyed by these new affirmative action policies that Barack Obama is going to try to implement, look at the movie Children of Men. Now, I don't suggest to you that this is a very good movie or it's a bad movie. It's an okay movie, but the visual effect, the visual imagery of the future is as accurate as any I've ever seen. This is what happens when the infrastructure breaks down. And with middle America, middle class America is destroyed, eradicated, this is when the infrastructure starts to fail. In addition, today, if you think the infrastructure is not failing, there's an article in the paper today about the post office now deciding to cut back on the days they deliver mail. Now they want to deliver mail, I think, 5 days a week instead of 6 days. Now, I've seen this coming for a long time. My local post office was open 4 hours on Saturday a few years ago, and then it went down to 3 hours. And now today, if you go to the post office, it's open an hour and a half on Saturday. An hour and a half. So, yes, I mean, it's almost closed now on Saturdays. But the infrastructure will deteriorate further, where you will see the post office delivering mail 3-4 days a week, where you will see stores, supermarkets, businesses only open 3-4 days a week. The hours will be cut, where the stores are no longer open 12 hours, 8 hours. They're open 6 hours. And eventually, when things get bad enough, stores will be open 4 hours. This is what happens when the infrastructure fails. Streets don't get paved. Garbage is not collected. You want to see the future? Go to Eastern Europe. You see garbage everywhere. There is no garbage collection in Eastern Europe. I asked why, and the fellow I discussed this with said to me that once the communist system broke down, they did not know what to do about all these services that were provided by the government. They were so used to the government giving them all these services. Once the government was gone, had been destroyed, the new government didn't put anything in place to replace the trash collecting service. So as a result, the garbage is everywhere, all over Eastern Europe. It looks like a bomb hit it. This is what's coming down the pike once Middle America is destroyed. And it will be destroyed, my friends, unless something changes during the Barack Obama presidency. Policies he's going to implement will be the seeds of destruction for the middle class. And the middle class will not exist if Barack Obama is successful. The middle class will not exist for more than another 10 years. Again, this is my opinion, but I think the facts back it up. We do have another program coming up after this, and so I'll be shutting down the broadcast here momentarily. I will be back on the air next Wednesday, and I will bring on my guest, Matthew Raphael Johnson, next Wednesday. And, of course, tonight I will be posting the interview with Mark Weber either this evening or tomorrow. But you will get this interview by tomorrow, and it is a very, very good interview. So I hope that all of you download it, upload it, whatever you call it, and listen to the interview. Once again, I apologize for the delay. But it is a very, very difficult task to edit this piece for the various reasons I gave, mainly the technical ones. I think in closing the show, we're going to go out with the Holocaust denier, Bishop Richard Williamson. I think we'll leave with his little commentary audio clip, which you can see on my website, my blog, shankblog.com. Please visit it, www.shankblog.com. Thank you for listening. Here is Bishop Richard Williamson from the Catholic Church. Here he is.
Many years ago, I believe that The historical evidence is hugely against 6 million Jews having been deliberately gassed in gas chambers as a deliberate policy of Adolf Hitler.
But you say not one Jew was killed
in gas chambers.
So there was no gas chambers.
I believe there were no gas chambers. Yes. I think as far as I have studied the evidence, I'm not going by emotion. I'm going by, I've understood the evidence, I think, for instance, people who are against, what is very widely believed today about quote unquote the Holocaust, I think that people, those people conclude, the revisionists, as they're called, I think the most serious conclude that between 200,000 and 300,000 Jews perished in Nazi concentration camps, but not one of them by gassing in a gas chamber. You may have heard of the Leuchter report. Fred Leuchter was an expert in gas chambers. He designed three gas chambers for three of the 50 United States for the execution of criminals. So he knew what's involved. And he studied what the supposed gas chambers in Germany at some point in the 1980s, what remains of the supposed gas chambers, the crematoria at Birkenau, Auschwitz, for instance. And his conclusion, his expert conclusion was it's impossible that these could ever have served for the gassing of large numbers of people. Because cyanide gas is very dangerous. Supposing you gas 300 people that you've crowded into one chamber and you gas them, they're all wearing some clothes. For instance, they're wearing any clothes. It's very dangerous to go in and pull out the corpses because one whiff of gas that's trapped in the clothing and escapes from the clothing will kill the person. It's extremely dangerous. Once you gas people, you've got to get rid of it. You've got to evacuate the gas to be able to get into the chamber again and use it. To evacuate the gas, You need a high chimney. If it's a low chimney, the gas goes onto the pavement and kills anybody walking by. You need a high chimney, right? I forget how high he says it must be. If there was a high chimney, then the shadow at any, most times of day, the shadow would have fallen on the ground, and the allied aerial photographers that flew over the camps would have picked up the shadow of this chimney. There were never any such shadows. There was no such chimney, which is according to Fred Leuchter's testimony, there can't have been glass chimneys. He looks at the doors and he says, the door has to be absolutely airtight. Otherwise, again, the gas escapes and kills the people outside. The doors of the gas chamber shown to tourists at Auschwitz is absolutely not airtight. Absolutely.
You know, what you're saying now is that the Holocaust never occurred. Not in the way history is written today.
I am going by what I judge to be the historical evidence, according to people who have observed and examined that evidence. I believe that what they conclude, if they change their conclusion, I would be liable to follow their conclusion, because I think they judge by the evidence. I think that 200,000 to 300,000 Jews perished in Nazi concentration camps, but nothing like that. None of them by a gas chamber. I don't know if you know.
This is not anti-Semitism. What is anti-Semitism?
Anti-Semitism. If anti-Semitism is bad, it's against truth. If something is true, it's not bad. I'm not interested in the word anti-Semitism. I mean, you know, the word is very
dangerous.
The
bishop calls you anti-Semitic.
The bishop can call me, he can call me a dinosaur, he can call me an idiot, he can call me what he likes. This is not a question of name calling. This is a question of historical truth. Historical truth goes by evidence and not by emotion. There's certainly been a huge exploitation. Germany has paid out billions and billions of Deutschmarks and now euros because the Germans have a guilt complex about their having gassed 6 million Jews. But I don't think 6 million Jews were gassed. Now, but be careful. I beg of you, this is against the law in Germany. If there was a German, somebody of the German state, you could have me thrown into prison before I leave Germany. I hope that's not your intention.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The War of Perception with Peter Schenck. I'll be back on the air next Wednesday, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Until then, good night. God bless you. Have a pleasant tomorrow.